A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's recovering from gallbladder surgery and struggling with bloating after meals. The standard advice is low fat, which makes sense, but he's also hitting the gym a few times a week and needs to keep protein up. So he's asking us to go through two food groups. First, meats and fish. What's naturally lower in fat compared to the rest? Second, cheese and dairy. Beyond the obvious low-fat cottage cheese, what other options actually deliver protein without the fat load? Practical question, and I suspect a lot of people hit this exact wall.
They absolutely do, and the post-surgery dietary guidance most people walk out of the hospital with is remarkably thin. It's basically a pamphlet that says, eat less fat, good luck. There's a real gap between that and actually building meals day to day, especially if you're trying to maintain muscle.
The bloating is the body's way of saying you got the math wrong.
So let's get concrete. The mechanism here is worth naming because it explains everything downstream. Without a gallbladder, you don't have that concentrated bile reservoir that dumps in response to a fatty meal. Your liver still makes bile, but it just drips continuously into the small intestine. It's dilute, it's uncoordinated, and it's often insufficient for a big fat load. Undigested fat ferments in the colon, gut bacteria feast on it, and that produces gas. Hence, the bloating.
The leaky faucet instead of the fire hose.
That's exactly the image. So the question becomes, how much fat can you handle per meal before the faucet can't keep up? And that threshold varies person to person, but the Mayo Clinic's guidance for post-cholecystectomy patients recommends keeping a food diary for about 2 weeks to find your personal limit. Some people handle 10 grams per meal fine. Others start having trouble at 5 or 6.
Which means the protein strategy is really about finding sources where the fat-to-protein ratio is as favorable as possible, maximizing the grams of protein you get per gram of fat you have to process.
Let's do meats and fish first, since that's where most gym-goers anchor their meals. The leanest land animal protein, by a significant margin, is skinless chicken breast. 100 grams cooked gives you about 31 grams of protein and roughly 3.5 grams of fat. Turkey breast is nearly identical. 30 grams of protein, about 2 grams of fat per 100 grams cooked.
Those are the benchmarks. Everything else is measured against skinless chicken breast.
Next tier down would be lean cuts of pork, specifically pork tenderloin. 100 grams gives you about 26 grams of protein and around 4 grams of fat. That's still very workable. Lean beef cuts like eye of round or top sirloin with all visible fat trimmed. You're looking at 26 grams of protein, but fat jumps to around 6 to 8 grams per 100. Still manageable for many people post-surgery, but you're creeping up.
What about the cuts people actually order when they're out? A ribeye, a strip steak?
Ribeye is a fat bomb. 100 grams of ribeye can easily hit 20 grams of fat or more. That's not one meal's worth for someone without a gallbladder. That's potentially 3 meals worth of fat arriving all at once. New York strip is better, but still in the 10 to 12 gram range. If you're eating steak post-cholecystectomy, you want filet mignon or you want a very lean sirloin and you want a modest portion, 4 ounces, not 12.
The hierarchy is basically, the more muscle works, the leaner it tends to be. Breast flies, so it's lean. Tenderloin doesn't do much, so it's lean, but also why it's tender. The chuck and the rib section do heavy lifting, so they're marbled.
That's exactly the anatomical cheat code. Now, fish is where this gets interesting, because fat in fish isn't inherently bad for digestion. The fat structure is different, but quantity still matters. The absolute leanest fish are white-fleshed, cod, haddock, pollock, tilapia. 100 grams of cod gives you about 23 grams of protein and less than 1 gram of fat. It's practically a protein isolate that happens to be a fish.
The chicken breast of the sea.
The chicken breast of the sea, and arguably even leaner. Next are things like halibut, flounder, sole, similar profile, maybe a gram or two of fat. Tuna is interesting. Canned light tuna in water, about 25 grams of protein, less than 1 gram of fat. Yellowfin tuna steak is lean too. But then you get to the fattier fish, salmon, mackerel, sardines, herring, and those are genuinely healthy fats, omega-3s, anti-inflammatory, all of that, but from a pure bile management standpoint, 100 grams of farmed Atlantic salmon is around 13 grams of fat. That's more than a lean sirloin.
Which doesn't mean don't eat it. It means portion it.
A 3-ounce piece of salmon is about 85 grams, so you're looking at roughly 11 grams of fat. If your personal threshold is 10 to 12 grams per meal, that's your whole fat budget for that meal. You can't also have olive oil on the vegetables and cheese on the salad.
What about the in-between meats? Lamb, veal, game meats?
Veal cutlet is quite lean, similar to pork tenderloin. Lamb varies wildly. Lamb loin chopped trimmed of fat is around 8 grams of fat per 100 grams. Lamb shoulder, much higher. Game meats are the sleeper category here. Bison, venison, elk. These are extremely lean. Bison top sirloin is about 28 grams of protein and roughly 2.5 grams of fat per 100 grams. That's competitive with chicken breast. Venison is even leaner, often under 2 grams of fat. The catch is availability and cost, but nutritionally, game meats are almost purpose-built for this situation.
They're not factory-farmed, so the fat profile tends to be better anyway.
Now, there's one more category in the meat section that I want to flag because it trips people up. Processed lean meats. Deli turkey breast, deli chicken breast. These can be extremely lean, sometimes under 1 gram of fat per serving. But you have to read the label because some brands add oils or skin in processing. The same goes for things like turkey pepperoni or chicken sausage. They market themselves as healthier alternatives, but they can still pack 6 to 8 grams of fat per serving.
The turkey bacon paradox. People think turkey means lean, and then they look at the label and it's got the same fat as the pork version.
Turkey bacon is one of the great nutritional heists of the modern grocery store. All right, should we shift to dairy?
Let's do it. So the prompt specifically says, besides low-fat cottage cheese, which is the obvious go-to, high-protein, low-fat, everyone knows about it.
Cottage cheese is the benchmark in dairy. Non-fat or 1% cottage cheese gives you about 12 to 14 grams of protein per half, cup serving with less than 1 gram of fat. It's essentially casein in edible form. But there's a whole landscape beyond it. Let me run through a hierarchy, leanest to richest. At the very top, non-fat plain Greek yogurt. 170-gram container, that's a standard single-serving size, gives you about 17 grams of protein and 0 grams of fat. It's a nutritional unicorn. The straining process removes the whey and concentrates the protein, and if you get the plain version, there's no added sugar.
The fat-free version of Greek yogurt doesn't have the textural punishment that fat-free regular yogurt has. It's still thick.
That's the straining. The protein structure gives it body even without fat. Next tier, Skyr, which is the Icelandic version of strained yogurt. Even thicker, even more protein, about 19 grams per 150 gram serving, fat-free versions available. It's essentially Greek yogurt that went to finishing school. Then you've got Quark, which is a Central European fresh cheese that's having a moment in North America. It's somewhere between yogurt and cream cheese in texture, and the non-fat versions deliver about 12 to 14 grams of protein per half cup, with virtually no fat.
I've seen Quark in stores, but never quite knew what to do with it.
It's incredibly versatile. You can use it as a sour cream substitute, you can mix it with herbs as a dip, you can put it on toast with smoked salmon, you can blend it into smoothies. It doesn't curdle under heat the way yogurt sometimes does, so it's actually more forgiving in cooking. But moving down the cheese list, part skim ricotta. This is a big one. A quarter cup of part skim ricotta gives you about 7 grams of protein and around 5 grams of fat. That's not zero fat, but the protein to fat ratio is favorable, and it's a completely different culinary niche than cottage cheese. You can use it in pasta dishes. You can spread it on toast with honey. You can stuff it into peppers.
Ricotta is whey-based, right? It's made from the whey left over from other cheese production.
Which is why the protein is mostly lactalbumin rather than casein. Different amino acid profile, but still high quality. Next, part skim mozzarella. This is the low-fat cheese that actually melts properly. A 28-gram serving that's about a 1-ounce slice has around 7 grams of protein and 4.5 grams of fat. Compare that to full-fat mozzarella at 6 or 7 grams of fat per ounce, or cheddar at 9 grams of fat per ounce. Part-skim mozzarella is the workhorse low-fat cheese.
It's not some sad diet product. It's what goes on most pizzas anyway.
It's the default mozzarella in most pizzerias. Now moving into the harder cheeses where things get less forgiving. Reduced-fat Swiss cheese, sometimes labeled as light Jarlsberg, or reduced fat Emmental, comes in around 7 grams of protein and 4 grams of fat per ounce. Reduced fat provolone is similar. But once you get into the hard-aged cheeses, Parmesan, aged cheddar, Gruyere, the fat content is inherently high because they're concentrated. A good Parmesan is around 30% fat by weight. The saving grace is you use very little of it. A tablespoon of grated Parmesan is maybe 5 grams, so the absolute fat load is small. It's a seasoning, not a protein source.
For someone who wants to hit, say, 30 grams of protein in a meal while keeping fat under 10 grams, what does a plate actually look like?
Let me build a few. Meal 1, 150 grams of cod fillet, baked with herbs. That's about 34 grams of protein, 1.5 grams of fat. Add a side of non-fat Greek yogurt with dill and cucumber as a sauce. That's another 5 grams of protein, 0 fat. You're at nearly 40 grams of protein, under 2 grams of fat. You've got room for some roasted potatoes with a teaspoon of olive oil, and you're still under 10 grams of fat total.
That's a lot of food for very little fat.
Meal 2, land-based, 4 ounces of bison sirloin, which is about 113 grams cooked. That's roughly 32 grams of protein, 3 grams of fat. Top it with a slice of part-skim mozzarella melted on top, add 7 grams of protein, 4.5 grams of fat. You're at 39 grams of protein and 7.5 grams of fat. You can still have a pile of steamed vegetables, and you're under 10.
What about something that feels more like comfort food? Because I think that's where people fall off the wagon. They can do the lean protein and steamed vegetables for 4 days, and then they want a lasagna.
That's the compliance problem. So here's a rebuild of comfort food, lasagna made with part skim ricotta, part skim mozzarella, lean ground turkey breast, 99% fat-free, and no-boil noodles. A generous square of that, depending on portion, can come in around 25 grams of protein and 8 to 9 grams of fat. It's not zero fat, but it scratches the itch without blowing the budget.
The lean ground turkey is doing a lot of work there. What's the fat on 99% fat-free ground turkey?
100 grams gives you about 28 grams of protein and roughly 1 gram of fat. It's basically chicken breast in ground form. Compare that to regular ground turkey, which can be 7 or 8 grams of fat per 100 grams because they often grind in the skin and dark meat. The labeling is deceptive. Ground turkey sounds lean, but unless it specifies 99% fat-free or extra lean, assume it's not.
Ground chicken breast is the same deal.
Now there's one more dairy category I want to hit because I think it's underappreciated. Whey protein isolates and concentrates. If someone is really struggling to hit protein without fat, a scoop of whey isolate in water or in a non-fat Greek yogurt smoothie gives you 25 grams of protein with less than a gram of fat. It's not a food, it's a supplement, but in the context of post-surgery recovery and gym maintenance, it's a legitimate tool. The isolate versions have had almost all the lactose and fat removed.
For someone who's bloating after meals anyway, whey isolate is less likely to cause additional issues than whey concentrate, because the lactose is what gets a lot of people.
And post-cholecystectomy, some people develop secondary lactose sensitivity that they didn't have before because the altered bile flow changes gut transit time and the microbiome adjusts. It's not universal, but it's common enough that I'd suggest someone in this situation try isolate before assuming they can't handle whey at all.
That's a good flag. So we've got the meat hierarchy. Skinless chicken and turkey breast at the top, then lean pork tenderloin, then lean game meats like bison and venison, then very lean beef cuts like eye of round, then white fish, which is essentially zero fat, then tuna, then the fattier fish like salmon, which are healthy but need portion control. And for dairy, non-fat Greek yogurt and skyr and quark at the top, then part-skim ricotta, part-skim mozzarella, reduced-fat Swiss, and then hard-aged cheeses used as seasoning rather than protein sources.
That's the landscape. But I think there's a deeper principle here that's worth surfacing. The conventional post-gallbladder advice is, eat low fat, and that's true, but it's incomplete. The more useful framing is fat per eating occasion. You don't have to eat low fat all day. You have to keep any single meal's fat load under your personal threshold. So you might eat 6 times a day instead of 3, keeping each meal's fat under 8 grams, and total daily fat could still be 40 or 50 grams. That's not a low-fat diet by the old definitions, it's a fat-distributed diet.
Which maps perfectly onto the gym schedule anyway. If you're eating 4 or 5 times a day to support training, you're already distributing.
And the protein pacing research supports this beyond just the gallbladder context. Spreading protein intake across 4 or 5 meals of 25 to 35 grams each is more effective for muscle protein synthesis than 2 big boluses. So the post-surgery dietary constraint and the gym goal are actually aligned, not competing.
That's the rare case where the medical restriction and the fitness goal shake hands instead of fighting.
The other piece that doesn't get enough attention is cooking method. The same chicken breast can be 3 grams of fat or 15 grams of fat depending on whether you poach it or pan fry it in butter. Dry heat methods without added fat. Grilling, broiling, baking, air frying, poaching, steaming. These preserve the protein without adding to the fat load. A nonstick pan with a spray of cooking oil adds maybe 0.5 gram of fat. A tablespoon of butter adds 12 grams. That's someone's entire meal budget.
Restaurants are the minefield here. Even a grilled chicken breast at a restaurant has often been finished with butter. You don't see it, you don't taste it as a distinct thing, but it's there.
Restaurant cooking is butter-forward in ways that would shock most people. A piece of fish that's listed as grilled on the menu has almost certainly been basted or finished with butter. The vegetables are sautéed in oil. The rice has butter stirred in. None of this is malicious. It's why restaurant food tastes good. But for someone managing bile flow, a restaurant meal can easily deliver 40 or 50 grams of fat without looking indulgent.
What's the strategy there? Just ask for everything dry.
Ask for the fish grilled with no butter, sauce on the side, vegetables steamed plain. It's not glamorous, but it's the difference between enjoying your evening and spending the next 3 hours in discomfort. Most kitchens will accommodate it. The other move is to order 2 appetizers instead of an entree. Smaller portions, easier to control. A shrimp cocktail and a side salad with dressing on the side is a completely reasonable post-cholecystectomy restaurant meal.
Shrimp itself, where does that land on the fat spectrum?
Shrimp is essentially zero fat. 100 grams of shrimp is about 24 grams of protein and less than 1 gram of fat. Same with scallops, crab, lobster. Shellfish in general are protein dense and fat poor. The danger with shrimp is what it's cooked in. Scampi means butter, fried means oil. But steamed shrimp, boiled shrimp, grilled shrimp with lemon, cocktail shrimp, those are ideal.
Shellfish is the secret weapon.
Shellfish and whitefish together are the most fat-efficient animal proteins available. If someone is really struggling to keep fat under 10 grams per meal while hitting 30 plus grams of protein, tilapia and shrimp with a side of non-fat Greek yogurt is basically impossible to beat.
Let's talk about egg whites, since we're in the protein space. Whole eggs are fairly fatty, about 5 grams of fat per large egg, most of it in the yolk. But egg whites?
Egg whites are almost pure protein. One large egg white is about 3.5 grams of protein, zero fat. A carton of liquid egg whites makes it easy. You can pour a cup, which is about 26 grams of protein, zero fat. Scramble that with some spinach and a slice of part skim mozzarella, you've got a high-protein, low-fat breakfast that takes 5 minutes. The yolks aren't forbidden. They've got nutrients, choline, all of that. But if you're trying to maximize protein while minimizing fat, you use mostly whites and maybe one yolk for flavor and color.
The omelet stops looking pale and sad.
One yolk fixes the whole aesthetic. Now there's one more category I think we should cover because the prompt didn't ask about it, but it's the logical next step, plant proteins. Tofu, tempeh, seitan, legumes. Not everyone wants to eat animal protein at every meal, and some of these are surprisingly good on the protein to fat ratio. Extra firm tofu, 100 grams, gives you about 10 grams of protein and 5 grams of fat. Not as efficient as chicken breast, but still workable. Tempeh is better, about 19 grams of protein and 11 grams of fat per 100 grams. Seitan is the standout, 25 grams of protein, less than 1 gram of fat per 100 grams. It's basically wheat gluten, so if someone's not gluten sensitive, it's an extremely lean protein.
Seitan is underrated in general. It's got a meaty texture, it takes marinades well, and the macros are absurd.
The macros are absurd. The only knock is it's not a complete protein, it's low in lysine. But if you're eating it alongside other protein sources over the course of a day, that doesn't matter. The body pools amino acids. You don't need every protein source to be complete at every meal.
To bring this back to the prompt's two groups, for meats and fish, the top tier is skinless chicken and turkey breast, white fish like cod and tilapia, shellfish, lean game meats, and egg whites. The second tier is pork tenderloin, very lean beef like eye of round, and light tuna. The be careful tier is salmon and other fatty fish, healthy but portion limited, and any processed meat where you haven't read the label. For dairy, top tier is non-fat Greek yogurt, skyr, quark, and non-fat cottage cheese. Second tier is part skim ricotta and part skim mozzarella. Third tier is reduced fat hard cheeses like Swiss, and then aged cheeses like Parmesan used as a seasoning rather than a main protein.
That's the framework. I'd add one practical tool, a kitchen scale. Eyeballing portions is how people accidentally double their fat intake without realizing it. That piece of salmon you think is 4 ounces is actually 6.5. That sprinkle of Parmesan you think is a tablespoon is actually 3. Weighing food for even 2 weeks builds an accurate mental model, and after that you can usually eyeball.
The two-week diary and the scale go together. It's not a forever thing, it's calibration.
Calibration is exactly the right word. You're recalibrating your sense of what a portion looks like for a body that now processes fat differently.
The payoff is real. You get to eat normally, you get to train, you get to avoid the bloating. You just have to be more deliberate than the average person about what's on the plate.
The other thing I'd say is that this gets easier over time. The body does adapt somewhat after gallbladder removal. The bile duct dilates a bit, the sphincter of Oddi adjusts, the gut microbiome shifts. Someone 6 months post-surgery typically has a higher fat tolerance than someone 6 weeks post-surgery. The early period is the hardest, and that's when being really disciplined about these food choices matters most.
The message is, you're not sentenced to a life of dry chicken and steamed broccoli. There's actually a lot of variety within the constraints. You just have to know where everything sits on the fat spectrum and portion accordingly.
The gym goal is not at odds with the medical constraint. If anything, the meal frequency and protein focus that support training are exactly what make the post-surgery diet sustainable.
One last thing on dairy. What about protein-fortified milk? Fairlife, things like that?
Fairlife skim milk is ultra-filtered, so it's got about 13 grams of protein per cup with zero fat. Regular skim milk is 8 grams of protein, zero fat. The ultra-filtering removes some of the lactose too, so it's easier on the stomach for a lot of people. If someone wants a glass of milk with a meal, that's a solid option. Fairlife also makes a protein shake with 30 grams of protein and 2.5 grams of fat per bottle. That's a convenient post-gym option that doesn't blow the fat budget.
It's actual milk, not a protein powder suspended in water.
It's just milk that's been filtered to shift the macro ratios. The ingredient list is essentially milk, lactase enzyme, and vitamins. It's one of the cleaner products in that space.
I think we've given this a thorough mapping. Meats and fish, dairy and cheese, some bonus categories, and the underlying principle about fat per meal rather than fat per day. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1724, a French mineralogist traveling through what is now South Sudan documented a luminous blue-green fluorite deposit near the Bahr el Ghazal River, describing it as stone that burns cold with captured moonlight. The deposit was lost to colonial record-keeping for nearly 2 centuries before being rediscovered in 1908 by a British survey team that had been looking for copper.
Hilbert's getting poetic.
Cold burning stone. Sounds like something I'd put on a DJ flyer.
The open question for anyone in this situation. What's the meal you keep coming back to that actually works? Because the dietitians give you lists, but the lived experience of finding your 5 or 6 go-to meals that don't cause trouble, that's the real adaptation. We've given the framework, now it's about building the rotation.
If you're just starting this journey, give yourself the 2 weeks of tracking. The scale, the diary, the honest accounting. It's tedious, but it's temporary, and what you learn about your own thresholds is worth more than any general advice.
That's it for this one. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the fact and the production work. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.